I'm Silvahara Pettion. Welcome to my show. We talk ordinary people, extraordinary stories, living life on their own terms. We come to the American dream bright-eyed and excited, right? With an attitude that is, I have opportunity. What do you want me to do? I have 2 master's degrees, but if you want me to sweep the floor, you got it. I'm gonna sweep the floor. We are so thrilled to have opportunity. We are so thrilled to have doors open, particularly as women, right? Coming from the culture and the background and listening to our parents talk about how opportunity was not available to them and ending up in situations where I feel like in some ways we're lacking context. Did you ever find yourself in a situation where you had to stop and go, what was that part of the American culture, or am I lacking context? Am I supposed to laugh at that, or is that inappropriate? Can you talk to me a little bit about that immigrant experience in the American dream?
Absolutely. When it comes to the immigrant experience in the American dream, and as you're living the American dream, you know, sometimes you don't even realize that you might be part of a cyclical nightmare. And that's because we are raised, if you're a child of immigrants or if you are an immigrant, you are sometimes facing a very real scarcity mindset, right? Like, more is more because I wouldn't have had it otherwise. I wouldn't have gotten it, whatever, right? Just like there is a true scarcity mindset, whether it's food scarcity, job scarcity, opportunity scarcity, right? I think American culture calls it fear of missing out. But I think as Iranian Americans, it's more like I wouldn't have had this had it not been for all the hardships and the pain, and this is the result, and you almost punish yourself more. And very recently, a couple years ago, I had to stop myself and say, I'm going to have to do a lot of work to overcome this scarcity mindset, but I'm going to actively spend the rest of my life choosing more abundance, more time for myself, more time being intentional about my actions, more time thinking through, not necessarily my words, right? Because if you grow up in a Persian household, you're always competing to get the last joke in, but just more abundance in terms of living a fuller life, living it without fear, living it where you're doing what you love and you have a reason to get up in the morning, but in a way where you're not treating time as a scarcity object. And I think that's the one thing when you are negotiating with yourself between, you know, living in the American dream, but with that immigrant context, we forget how valuable our time is. And we tend to prioritize everything else to fulfill or sustain the scarcity mindset, which is insatiable. And it's up to people as individuals to even say, maybe I'm not totally aware of what's going on or what world I'm living in, but I need to slow down and figure it out instead of bopping from one thing to the next.
You know, speaking of scarcity mindset, there is something else that goes with that, and that is the fear, right? The scarcity mindset also sort of is a brother, sister, the sibling to living in fear of not having it, right? Not having the opportunity, not having enough, not being enough, not doing enough. And the fear of failure, regardless of how much you tell yourself you haven't failed, the perception of fear of failure, right? And part of that is so deeply ingrained in a lot of us that if we have not done the work, that it prevents us from doing what you are doing and what I am doing, which is using the power that we have, which is the power of our voice, to speak on things like equity and equality and burnout rate and opportunity. You know, can you talk a little bit about what it takes to overcome that inherent fear that we have in order for us to stand in our truth and then stand in our power, to use our voices. And I have so much respect for you for literally living it out and building a career around the power of equity and opportunity and using your voice to do so. But I also know that there's so many of us that are stuck in the cyclical situation in corporate America, in different organizations, even in relationships and friendships, where we are afraid to use our words to stand up for ourselves in order for us to really just be and feel that we're worthy of it. Can we talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely. And I think you hit the nail on the head when it comes to fear, when it comes to failure. Iranian Americans are the worst when it comes to this. We have significant attachments to what we think success looks like. And if we asked ourselves, what does success really look like? I can answer that for myself. You know, success looks like me, you know, taking the values and the background and everything I've learned around me from my family to my friends to my peers to my experiences and making the best decision possible and not punishing myself, you know, if it doesn't go that way. It's constantly like resetting expectations and goals void of all the external pressures and all the external noise and sometimes the self-inflicted noise. And as children of immigrants, as you know, as I've observed my parents, as I observe, especially like American culture, this isn't even Iranian culture, we have a very real attachment problem. There are a lot of desires. People have a lot. People value things strangely. And they value things strangely. They value materials strangely, right? People strangely. Oh, well, I need to stay in this relationship because my mom loves him so much. And if I didn't, you know, what is she going to think of me? Oh, I better get an A on this test because my father was so disappointed. Or I did get an A, but that guy got a 98 and I got a 97. And my dad's going to ask who's got, right? These aren't totally real examples, but
why couldn't you get 99, right? It's like, right. Every immigrant child knows that comparison element of, wait, they got 99 and you got 98. Why couldn't you get 100? Why couldn't you get 99?
Why did he win, right? Oh no, my food's going to go to waste. So I'm going to sit down and gorge on everything in my fridge because if my parents find out that, right? There's this constant attachment and we have almost lost our ability to critically think or reason through our actions. Because we are so attached with the weird values and the weird restraints. And there's got to be a day where you give yourself your own voice to say, screw it. It is what it is. There's only so much we can do. And time is the only thing in your life that you don't get to buy back. And you also have no idea. You objectively have no idea how much of it you have, but you do have the control on how you're going to spend it, how you spend your mental time, your physical time, and how we punish ourselves internally as people who are mixed between two cultures and two worlds. It's a problem. And I don't think we're going to solve for that problem today, right? We're trying to solve for also equality and inclusion and et cetera. It's a lot. It can be its own mental toll because what does success look like? Success looks like people not being treated like because of who they are. Well, it takes generations to make change happen. And so we're not going to see, I've already accepted, we're not going to see monumental change. We're not going to get the instant gratification of change in at least our lifetime. And if we do, then I'll be pleasantly surprised and that'll be a great lifetime. But I'm okay.
How do we stay empowered empowered in that space, right? Because this is a conversation that is really in the forefront now. This is a conversation that a lot of people are having in their within corporate America, in different organizations, in different industries. You know, as individuals, how do we stay empowered in a world where social media is dominant and instant gratification is what we're all chasing, right? How do we stay focused and empowered to continue to do the work that is necessary for us to be able to see change down the road?
Empowerment comes through community. Once you have the sense of self and you kind of know who you are, it's never going to be perfect and nobody truly ever really knows who they are, right? If you do know who you are and you've got that down, please call me. I'm still learning. It's in my practice. But empowerment comes through community, the ability to riff, reason, critically think, discuss, have dialogue without bias or judgment or punishing. We now live in a society where if you have a different view from somebody else, that person's wrong and you must be right and everything else goes to crap. I have no idea how we went from some of the most incredible social media platforms that have really propelled change and conversation and the evolution of spaces to this toxic culture that we're facing now. It's unbelievable. And I know that toxicity has existed throughout generations, right? You had it through letters, you did have it through print, but there is something different about the fact that you and I, that the likelihood of me finding someone who has a polar opposite view of whatever it is, donuts are better than like cake or coffee is better than orange juice. And the fact that you can get to such a visceral point of a conversation where you can't then walk away and agree to disagree, that's the problem. That's not equality. Equality and diversity also allows for a diverse set of ideas. Whether it's through politics or food choices or lifestyle, we should agree to live in a society where it's okay to think differently, to have people different from you. And I do think we are beginning to lose that in a very scary way. And it's becoming more and more personal as people lose the ability to think critically.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but this is kind of in the arena of your PhD, is it not?
It is. I felt myself go down this rabbit hole and I couldn't stop talking.
But that's great. That's a great transition to, you know, the next question was, what is your PhD about? And that now that we've kind of talked a little bit about, it's having dialogue without, and the question, I think the question you're asking in your PhD is that, how did we get here, right?
Right.
Can you break Absolutely. It down in layman's terms for people to understand what exactly you're studying in your PhD?
Okay. So my PhD dissertation focus is very much looking at misinformation online. And specifically, there's a new phenomenon that may or may not be relevant that people are looking at called deep fake videos. Videos of people that appear and sound to be true, but they're completely falsified. With today's technology, I can take a picture of you, Silva, and your voice and emulate it to say, I really love Flaming Hot Cheetos. But you might be a Doritos fan. It's not true that you love Flaming Hot Cheetos, but I can manipulate your sound and appearance to say anything I want. And I think that is a scary world we live in. We're already having a hard time with trusting and verifying our source of information online. We're already having a hard time with people trying to self-litigate, right? There, every individual at home with a computer screen, a TV or whatever is now the jury and all, right? And media channels are on trial of whether or not what they're saying is believable or not. But here we have a new phenomenon coming out where we can manipulate any individual's persona and make them say whatever they want. And there is currently no accountability or roadblocks to prevent that. And I'm very focused less on maybe how we misinformation around celebrities and politicians and public figures. I'm more nervous about when somebody's likeness, somebody's face and voice is being manipulated and disparaged or altered in a way that really, really is deception on full display, how is that person going to recover, right? You can create career-ending content. You can create all sorts of stuff. I won't even get into specific examples to ruin someone's life. And there is no avenue or recourse for that individual. And there is no accountability to stop bad actors from doing this. And so And so the ultimate thing is, I'm really curious if misinformation online, specifically deep fake videos, have the power to manipulate an individual's values, beliefs, and ideas. Can we even plant false memories with fake audiovisual content in the future?
And eventually the impact of that, right? I mean,
right.
If we are going to take anything as an example, we can take the last 4 years, right? And not exactly in the same arena, but if you're studying or wondering, you know, how does this impact people? How does misinformation or fake news or disinformation distributed on different platforms impact people's psyche, people's core belief system, people's ability to discern information? What kind of action, you know, emotional impact does it have? And does it lead to any kind of action? I think the last 4 years have been an important display of what happens when all of that goes unchecked and there is lack of accountability as to what is real and what is not, right? We've seen the whole conspiracy thing just sort of blossom and lead to a lot of the stuff that we've watched. I don't want to get into that because this is not a political conversation, but I think it's important to actually talk about and be aware of this stuff because it really impacts us. And the important thing is you're saying it may even impact us in ways that we don't even realize, right?
Right. There, the way I look at impact, I like to use the word consequences. There are good and bad consequences to every action. And I think people underestimate how many bad consequences can culminate from misusing technology and the internet. And we are also in a society where if you're not critically looking at the information presented in front of you, if you're not verifying sources, if you are not taking the time to value, you know, what you're consuming, whether it's movies, music, video, social media, then I believe that the susceptibility of changing someone's values, planting false memories, you know, creating entire narratives that aren't true, I think it's coming sooner rather than later. Just recently, about 2 weeks ago, a mother deep faked cheerleaders on her daughter's squad to, you know, in sexually explicit and suggestive videos using deep fake technology. Somebody who is not a professional video manipulator, somebody who is not, right, has not been like working the sound, a boom mic her whole life, right? Just a mother who wanted her daughter to be the star cheerleader and wanted to ruin the reputations, right? These are girls under 18 on a cheerleading squad. Their kid, I mean, I don't know much about cheerleading. I wasn't one, but how much is really on the line here? Like, right? What drives someone to this unacceptable behavior? And the fact that this just happened is demonstrating another case use. You have a person who is over 18 deep faking underage girls as a weird revenge scenario so that she can best position her daughter as a cheerleader in high school. It's absurd. And I'm sure everyone has their reasons or they're driven to points and there's things going on at home. It's COVID. There's a pandemic. We all have our pandemic demons. Everybody has them. But we've got to get back to a place of some semblance of reason and sanity.
Thank you very much for joining us and spending so much of your time today and your wisdom. If you are interested in connecting with her, I will be putting all of her information somewhere below this video. So be sure to connect with her and me and send us your ideas for our next episode. I'm Silva Harapetian. See you next time.
We talk ordinary people, extraordinary stories, living life on their own terms.